today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Got to the point where, as much as I respected the guys at IRS, we basically tried to record the records so they wouldn't know we were recording them. Hey everybody, it's Patrick here. Welcome to Rockin' the Suburbs on behalf of myself and Jim Linehan. This is another episode in the recently inaugurated series, Second Album Syndrome. If you listened to yesterday's episode, or more importantly, if you didn't listen to yesterday's episode, please go back and do so. I kind of lay out the concept of the Second Album Syndrome, which I'm sure a lot of people know what that is. If you're music fans and listen to this podcast, you probably have a good idea. But I also talked about the first experience I ever had with Second Album Syndrome, and it was a bad one, with Men Without Hats, with Rhythm of Youth, followed up by Folk of the 80s, Part 3. Still hard to say that with a straight face, Folk of the 80s, Part 3, you try it. But today I want to tell you about the first positive experience I had, and it actually occurred in the same year as the experience, or close to the same year, or at some point in the past, as my Men Without Hats experience. And it shows, I think, how much of a period of discovery I was going through at the time. Me and my friends were just constantly scouring any available source to find music, new music, trying to push each other, trying to find new sounds, trying to find old records that would turn people on and all that stuff. But I will tell you that by the summer of 1983, I was not only listening to Men Without Hats album, but I was listening to the radio a lot and always wanting to go to see concerts when we could. And one that we had bought tickets for and were excited about was seeing the Police at the Capitol Center. In August of 1983, it's a pretty big arena, famous for, of course, the venue where Heavy Metal Parking Lot was filmed. So it was a big basketball arena where the Washington Bullets at the time played their basketball, and the Washington Capitals played hockey. And listening to DC 101, the local radio station, they were touting the Police, and of course you couldn't go anywhere around this time without hearing Synchronicity, backwards and forwards. And I was struck and caught, and my friends also, by a song they were also playing by the band that was going to be opening up for the Police. And it was a song called Radio Free Europe. It had a very strange kind of a drum intro, and there were some strange lyrics that were kind of murky about deciding yourself if you want radio to hang around. And this was a very, very intriguing song.
Thank you.
And before too long, we discovered the album that that song came from. And I think it was actually after seeing the concert, or maybe just before. I'm not sure. We weren't very well immersed into the first REM album, Murmur, at that time. Now, I do want to bring up an ancillary topic very briefly, and that is, I can hear people out there listening to this saying to themselves, but wait a minute, Chronic Town was the first REM album. Murmur was really the second album Syndrome record. No. It's not the case. An EP doesn't count for this, okay? It just doesn't. It's an EP. It's an extended play. It's not a long play. And I don't know. You can classify that any way you want to, actually. But for my purposes here, I was thinking about a Murmur as the first album, and also because it was the first one I heard. I don't think I even heard Chronic Town until later on. Anyway, became very immersed in Murmur, and all throughout the fall and winter of 1983, and my friends and I were listening all the time, getting into it, trying to understand it, and learning about this strange group from Georgia called REM. And in the spring of 1984, I remember going with my friend Andy to a record store called Penguin Feather. I don't know if anybody had a Penguin Feather near them when they were growing up, but it was a record shop. It sold posters and other things. And then in the back there was a curtain, sort of a beaded curtain that you went through, where they sold tobacco smoking accessories, if you know what I mean. And you had to sign a waiver, of course, that you were over 16 and would only use this product for tobacco, of course. What else would you use it for? Anyway, it was that kind of store, Penguin Feather. And one thing they had was Midnight Madness. So once a month, they would have, at midnight, they would be open for a few hours, and there'd be a great half-price sale on these albums, or I don't know, 30% or something like that. I seem to remember it as 50% off, but I don't know for sure. But anyway, it was a good discount when you were a kid without much money. I went there in the spring of 1984. I purchased REM's second record, which I didn't even know was out. And it turned out it had only been out for a couple of weeks at the time. And I also purchased Lou Reed's New Sensations. I remember that very clearly because that had come out that spring as well and was pretty new. My first Lou Reed solo album that I ever bought was that. And I was blown away by Reckoning. Not only did I, and perhaps I still do, think it's a better record than Murmur, I just couldn't believe the band that made this, I don't know, murky, mysterious creation made this record that was bigger and wider and seemed more accessible to me. It had ballads on it. It had some right out of the gate punch you in the face tracks when you drop the needle on that thing, second guessing.
Ooh.
Now, an interesting thing about REM's reckoning was, I remember this very specifically being very impressed by this. The sides were not labeled side one or side two. They were side left and side right. So I always thought the right side was the first side. And I think over time it's been revealed really that was supposed to be the second side. But in any case, I liked that one to start off with, even though it had the long, murky camera in the middle of the record. But interestingly enough, talking yesterday a little bit about some of the factors that make a second album difficult or have come to be behind this second album curse or syndrome or whatever you want to call it. But I found something very interesting in The Source of All Human Knowledge about this topic. And as I mentioned, one of the factors about a first successful album is the record company usually wants it to be out the second one quicker because there's a demand in the market and people are interested in the group. And not only do they want you to be out there touring behind the first one, they want you to be making the second one at the same time. So, and I will say, it's not like REM was on a major, major label. They weren't on Warner Brothers or anything yet. They were still on IRS Records, which, you know, was a fairly small operation in compared to Columbia or Warner's or any of the big ones. But yet, many of the things were still there, the factors. So let me read this. I think it's pretty insightful. Quote, during recording, there was pressure from IRS Records to try to make the album more commercial. The label sent messages to Don Dixon and Mitch Easter, the producers, which the producers told the band they would ignore. While the producers respected IRS President Jay Boberg, they expressed dismay at the comments he made when he visited during the last day of the sessions. Dixon called Boberg, quote, record company clueless, while Easter said, quote, I got along with Jay okay, but now and again he would express an opinion that would make me think, holy sh, because it would strike me as really teenage, end quote. Peter Buck said he was grateful that Dixon and Easter acted as a buffer between the band and its label. Peter Buck said that, quote, it got to the point where as much as I respected the guys at IRS, we basically tried to record the records so they wouldn't know we were recording them, end quote, and explained that part of the reason why REM recorded the album so quickly, apparently in somewhere between 14 to 20 days, was that the group wanted to finish before the label representatives showed up to listen to the tracks. That is from The Source of All Human Knowledge. And there's a raft of interesting information about reckoning out here now. For example, at the time in 1984, I certainly didn't know that REM had recorded a bunch of songs in November of 1983 with Neil Young producer Elliot Mazur in San Francisco as sort of a tryout, I guess. I don't know. But I never knew that until years later. Found that very interesting. But as I said, here's an example of a record that for me just was massive. I mean, I didn't think there was anything on Murmur that was as strong as Don't Go Back to Rockville or as Seven Chinese Brothers or even the beautiful South Central Rain. I'm sorry, the song that was the single, although it wasn't nearly a big, big hit, but it just, to me, showed incredible range and growth. And I just thought, wow, I didn't think these guys, I thought they were more of a weird little basement band. I didn't think they could do something like this. And of course, Time After Time, also on this record, my least favorite song, according to the Steve Malcolmist song. Anyway, I just was kind of blown away by the fact that, hey, it can get better. And not only that, this was a brand new record, man. This group's going to come around on tour. I'm going to be able to get to see this. This is brand new. So that was very exciting. And it was later that year, I believe, that I saw REM doing the headlining show for the first time, or maybe early 1985, one of the two. But just kicked off a wonderful period about learning about and being into this band. But that was my first experience with the positivity of a second album syndrome or second album period. I think it's very exciting to think about that. And I can still feel excited about it now, just going back and talking and thinking about it. So the second album syndrome we've established here, at least through my personal lens, can be bad, and it also can be good. And we'll discuss it a little further in the coming episodes this week. We will have a bracket update for everybody tomorrow. We are going to go down the winners of the second round of the Critics Quadrant. And then we will preview the Listeners Quadrant, where we have four tasty matchups for you. So make sure to go to facebook.com/suburbspod and vote every day in the new matchup. If you are listening to this on March 10th, the day it is released, the matchup will be U2's Octoom Baby against the Smashing Pumpkins' Siamese Dream. So make sure to get over to the socials on Facebook to vote for one of those two records. It should be a tight battle. Both records got close to 150 votes in the first round. All right, folks, we will send you out now with a little something from REM's Reckoning. What's your favorite song on this record? Well, I'll play you mine, and we will spend a little more time this week thinking about Second Album Syndrome. With that, we'll talk to you guys with a bracket update tomorrow.
It's been pretty simple so far. And Athens is coming. Knock, knock, knock on wood. I thought I'd left you behind.
Still hard to say that with a straight face. Folk of the 80s, part 3. You try it.